This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
My wife Alice doesn't want to go to Chinatown for Thanksgiving this year, Calvin Trillin wrote in 1996. Alice has changed, I told friends when I learned of her decision. She's not the Alice we once knew. But then again, maybe she is. Now that I look back on those Thanksgiving meals, Alice and I and our two daughters in a Chinese restaurant stuffing down some particularly festive fare, like minced squab and lettuce leaves, maybe she was the one member of the family who was lacking genuine enthusiasm. Alice in this scene is Alice Trillin, and Calvin Trillin wrote about her for 40-some years in dozens of pieces in The New Yorker. Alice was so much a character in Trillin's writing that after she died, he got condolence letters from strangers, readers who only knew Alice as a literary character. Still, he worried that his portrait of his wife was somehow incomplete, and after a few years, Trillin sat down and wrote a memoir called About Alice. And then, some years later, this year in fact, Calvin Trillin adapted his memoir for the stage.
My previous brush with the stage was many years ago when I did a couple of what my daughters called one-ham shows. I stood on the stage and discussed a wide variety of subjects from childhood with my older sister, Suki the Oppressor, to a poem I was writing about George H.W. Bush's know-it-all chief of staff entitled, If You Knew What Sununu Knew. Tonight there won't be a variety of subjects. Tonight is about Alice.
Bud Trillin, if you know Calvin, you call him Bud, joined me in the studio last week, and it was a few days after the play started performances in New York. You've done something that's, I think, reasonably unique in literature in general, which is to describe a happy marriage. The literature in every language is filled with all kinds of dramatic bad marriages and catastrophic marriages and lonely marriages. In a way, to write about a happy marriage, which you did in The New Yorker in many different forms, whether it was in your food pieces or comic pieces, you talk about her all the time. You were writing and portraying a happy marriage.
It's true. At one point, I said we might be on the Grey Line tour as the only happy family in Lower Manhattan. I guess it's a problem writing about it in the sense this play certainly would have failed Drama 101 because it doesn't have conflict and then resolve that and all that, and it doesn't do that. It's just more of a kind of character study. And I guess there is a disadvantage. But you have to write about what you know about. I didn't know about anything else.
But anybody that knew your wife, Alice, in your presence, only thought one thing. What did you do to deserve Alice Trillin? How did you possibly win her over? Let's be frank.
Well, we originally met at a Monocle party. Monocle was a magazine, a doomed magazine of political satire. And as its financial situation became nastier and nastier, the parties got larger and larger.
When I saw Alice at the Monocle party, she was wearing a hat.
I wasn't wearing a hat.
I can still see her in the hat, a white hat cocked a bit to the side.
I never owned such a hat. After I'd heard about the effect it had had, of course, I kept my eyes open for one.
Then I did some detective work and changed a few engagements and showed up at a party a couple of weeks after that that I knew she would be attending. I compared myself in the play to a lounge comic who has heard that there's a booker for the Tonight Show in the audience.
She's the booker for the Tonight Show.
Yeah, there was a constant banter about some of my favorite subjects.
Do you talk mostly about animals?
Well, I try to limit myself, but it isn't easy in New York.
You mean in New York you run into a lot of animals that are just begging to be talked about?
Well, there's the talk.
And you fell in love right away?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, these things never are totally smooth, but yeah, I would say that I was smitten right away.
How would you describe Alice to someone who's never read about her or someone who's never knew her?
She was very outspoken. I don't think I was ever in a group conversation where she was present, where she didn't have something to say. She wasn't one of the people who sat back. And she was firm in her opinions.
Is this meant to be funny?
Well, maybe mildly amusing.
Mildly amusing.
How about rye? I'm often described as rye. I've decided that rye means almost funny, but that's fine. If you think it might be rye is fine. I'd settle for rye.
Rye.
Well, what did you think?
I think this is very funny.
You do?
Yes, I do. One of the funniest things you've ever written. Gotcha.
I think I should handle the jokes around here.
She loved beautiful clothes, and she liked travels and beautiful surroundings, but she had a sort of a contempt for people who spend their lives getting more material things and money than you could use. She had a phrase for that. She always said, "They lack a sense of enoughness." And I wrote about something called Alice's Law of Compensatory Cash Flow.
Now, this is a very important theory, and I think people need to hear it very carefully because it's very important to grasp.
The Alice's Law of Compensatory Cash Flow holds that not buying some luxury you can't afford is the equivalent of windfall income. So if you say, well, we didn't get that stereo set, so we could use that money to go to Martinique. And so then the other person in the household sort of pats his pocket looking for his wallet where that money might be.
At a certain point, the Trillin household enters your writing. Alice becomes not merely a human being in this world, but also a kind of literary character in the work of Calvin Trillin. When did that begin, and was she on board with it right away?
She was all right about it. I mean, partly because it wasn't very serious. I mean, I used to do this series, U.S. Journal. I went someplace every 3 weeks for a story for The New Yorker. And at one point, I realized that I could write a lighter piece, comic relief for me more than the readers, by writing about eating.
But I talked to Dr. Seligman today. He said that when you were in there for your checkup, you weighed 180 pounds.
And I think that sort of got so pretty soon Alice was the person who told me not to eat that much.
Given the fact that this is a long-distance call, do you think you might be in violation of some federal law on interstate appetite impairment?
If so, my community service sentence would be supervising your diet. It doesn't have to start tonight. Think of tonight as Mardi Gras, followed by a very long Lent. Have a nice dinner.
Alice Trillin in life was a much more substantial person than just the person who told you you're eating too much. She said, of course, that she came across in my stories like a dietitian in sensible shoes. Mm. I was giving a speech once, and I was asked, is Alice in the audience? And what did she think of that description? And she stood up, and she didn't say anything. She just took off these fantastically expensive-looking shoes and held one of them up.
They weren't sensible.
They were not sensible
not
at all.
Not the least bit sensible.
And I guess that's one of the reasons I wrote the piece in The New Yorker when you called and said, were you interested in writing a piece about
Right. Alice. That Alice, who had had lung cancer many years before, had what essentially was not a relapse so much, but the physical effects of the surgeries and radiation weakened her capacity to recover, and she died in 2001 around the time of 9/11.
Right, that night.
And we talked about your writing about her eventually. I didn't ask right away.
No, it was a few years later.
Were you wary of writing about her again in a period of loss and grief as opposed to the happiest days of your marriage?
Yeah, if you had called right away, I think I would have just said no. And but I saw it, I think, as an opportunity to expand on or actually sort of correct some of the stuff I'd written about her. I wanted to write about her as a real person, a substantial person, and who had a lot of not just accomplishments but wisdom and things to say.
For a long time after I found out that I had cancer, I loved hearing stories about people who had simply decided that they would not be sick. The thought that my children would grow up without me was ridiculous. I simply had to be there. Not being there was unacceptable. But I also knew that some unacceptable things happened.
You got condolence letters not merely from your friends and family, but you got loads of condolence letters from people who knew her from your pieces. How did they react to her death?
Well, most of them made me cry, and oddly enough, most of those were from people who only knew Alice from stories. There was one particular line said, "I look at my boyfriend, and I think, will he love me like Calvin loves Alice?" I was sort of surprised at those letters. I finally said they may not have known her, but they knew how I felt about her. And they got that from this sort of sitcom treatment, which surprised me.
When I'm asked by young people how they might go about linking up with someone with whom they're likely to enjoy a long and happy marriage, I tell them, wander into the right party. That's what happened to me.
But thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
The New Yorker's Calvin Trillin, about Alice, is running a theater for a new audience in Brooklyn. We heard Jeffrey Bean as Calvin and Carrie Paff portraying Alice.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.